this concept of mindsets and the fact that going after bigger sales really does challenge your mindsets and get you out of your comfort zone quite often, because you're expecting that there's going to be more objections with a larger sale, or you're expecting that the chance of rejection is going to be higher.
Welcome to Data-Driven Selling by the Sales Insights Lab, the podcast that helps reps and business owners generate more meetings and close more sales at higher prices. Okay, so whale hunting, going after the biggest deals. I'm super excited to talk about this because this is something that is very near and dear to my heart. I think we don't talk about it enough. And so I am here with Tiffany Torres, who is the head coach at the Sales Insights Lab, and excited to dive in. So first of all, let's just start off with, why go big in the first place?
I think that going big has a lot of benefits to it, including the fact that the amount of time that you're investing to the amount of revenue that you're driving for you or your organization is just so much bigger. And that makes it a really fun place to play around in.
Yeah. I've spent, I'd say, a lot of my career focusing on this particular metric because for clients, because I think it's the area where people don't spend enough time thinking about. Now, I understand that there are certain salespeople or companies where it's like, you're just like, the whole business is based off of selling, you know, $3,000 widgets. And like, it's just, you're just selling $3,000 units at a time and that's it. And that's certainly okay. But I think for most organizations, there tends to be opportunities to make bigger deals. And so obviously there's, just to kind of break down my thought process on this, there's three ways to increase sales, right? One is to get more at-bats, to get more in front of more prospects, right? Two is to close a higher percentage of the at-bats that you get in front of, like close a higher percentage of your deals. And three is to close bigger deals. And so I think a lot of people focus on like, how do I get in front of more prospects? How do I close at a higher percentage? But I think very rarely are people thinking about like, what can I do to just make bigger sales on average? And so let's kind of first dive into like, what are really the basic ways that you can increase your average sales size in the first place?
So I think the first is to focus on the value of the challenges that you solve. So often we get stuck in this space as salespeople of, well, this is the amount that, you know, this widget costs versus here's the problem that I'm solving for this prospect and what it's worth to them. Framing it in terms of like what it means to the prospect is going to be able to give you a lot more flexibility when you're coming to the table and discussing budget with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's really about like taking the focus off of price and making it more about what is the cost of not solving it, basically. And just to be clear, I mean, there's really two key ways to make bigger deals, right? One is to just increase your prices, to just charge more for what you're already doing. The other is to kind of package together bigger offerings. And realistically, the best thing to do is to do both of those in general. But it starts by really focusing on the value. Because like, let's take the idea of sticker shock. When your prospects get sticker shock, what does sticker shock really mean? Like, what is the mathematical equation going on in their head? Yeah, I mean, what's your take?
It's the cost and the cost of the challenges that they're going through, and then the way that feels to them, the pain that's associated with them, is not strong enough to justify the sticker price that they're seeing.
Right. So like, let's just take the analogy of a car, and I know we don't teach people how to sell cars, but like, I think it's a useful analogy because everyone's been in the world of buying a car, right? Like, if you make a certain income, like anyone can buy a brand new Range Rover. Like you can, like, should you? No, probably, unless you're making a lot of money, but like anyone can through financing, like you can buy a brand new Range Rover. So let's say a brand new Range Rover is $150,000. You finance that. So your monthly nut on the Range Rover is, let's say, $1,200 a month. Like you can afford it. It's just like, if you were going and looking for cars and someone's like, oh, here's the brand new Range Rover, you should buy this. And then you're like, well, how much is it? And they're like, $150,000. You're immediately like, whoa, no way. That's way too expensive. And so like, what is the calculus that's happening in this person's brain that's causing them to say that? It's because they're thinking like, well, what is the utility of this? Like, what do I intend to use this for? What is the challenge that I'm looking to solve? And for most people, it's not a $150,000 problem. And given like their current income, like it just doesn't make sense because the challenge doesn't justify, you know, for most people, it's like, yeah, it just like Chrysler Town and Country solves all the same challenges of like needing to shuttle my kids around, and I can do it for 1/5 the cost. And so and now let's take an analogy of like, let's say a B2B situation, right? So it's like, if your prospect is getting sticker shock on, let's say like a consulting project, it's because they are not seeing the actual value in what you do or the problems that you're going to solve in comparison to the cost of or the fee of what that service is going to be.
And this is why a good strategy is so meaningful, because I think a lot of salespeople walk into opportunities like that prospect has all the insight into the challenge that the salesperson has, when in reality, that salesperson has what, hundreds of conversations at minimum a year with people in these challenges. And then they walk into the space with prospects and they go, well, clearly you should be able to connect what your challenge is to the solution I'm presenting to you for like 5-10 minutes. And they can't. When we think about good strategy in its space with whales, we need the prospect. We need to walk the prospect through a series of strategic questions to help them understand what their challenge looks like, the totality of that experience for them. And that's where you drive value.
That's right. You've got to get them to, and this is obviously the strategy side, which is get them to articulate either the cost of the challenge or the value of solving the challenge, which are the same thing, in comparison to what your eventual fee is going to be. Like that number, we always say in the Sales Insights Lab, it's got to be like a 10-to-1 ratio. So like, again, let's just use the analogy of consulting because it's easy for me. And it's also very like you're selling air, right? So there's no like defined value to a consulting project. But like if the cost to the company for their challenges is $10 million, suddenly like a $500,000 consulting project is, if they really believe that what you're going to do is going to fix the problem, like a $500,000 consulting project, even for something that doesn't take a lot of work, is super valuable because they're like, well, if this can solve a $10 million problem, it's like, sure, no brainer.
Exactly. And I do want to like dovetail into this concept of mindsets and the fact that going after bigger sales really does challenge your mindsets and get you out of your comfort zone quite often, because you're expecting that there's going to be more objections with a larger sale, or you're expecting that the chance of rejection is going to be higher. When in my experience, there is, you know, certainly a larger sale might have a few more steps depending on what you're selling. But there's really not a clear line between like a larger sale is specifically harder. I've had lots of very small sales be very, very hard to close before I had the right training. So I think this is a challenge to our mindsets and a challenge for, you know, especially if you're selling for yourself, what you think you're worth and how you view your solutions.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, that was true for me when I started my business. I mean, my first kind of consulting training projects were, I remember I closed a deal for like $15,000 and it involved like 5 days of on-site training. And I was like so excited. But like in hindsight, like that was so outrageously cheap. And, you know, granted, when you're just getting started, you know, you're just excited to close deals. But it's like, I wouldn't do that now for, you know, 10 times that, right? So it's like you just, so much of that is mindsets. And you know, there's a growth process there. All right, cool. So let's kind of shift gears here, because I do think that there's another element, which is, and this is not always true, right? I don't think you always have to do this, but like in general, in order to make bigger deals, like going after bigger prospects can really make that process easier. Now, I think you can make very large deals off of smaller businesses if you're creating the value. But I do think as a general rule of thumb, like bigger companies are likely to have bigger budgets and bigger, you know, the cost of challenges and all that. And so just kind of like working your way up market is naturally going to lead to bigger deals.
Focusing on those prospects that fit a specific profile that you know how to communicate the value to. But I also think getting into that space of understanding how to communicate that value, perhaps to those different prospects, like shifting the strategy, because the way that somebody who understands their situation, maybe more sophisticated prospect, might observe the challenge that you're helping to solve might be slightly different than maybe a smaller prospect.
100%. Yeah, you've got to, we were just talking about this on the lead gen program last night, you've got to speak the language of that prospect. And if you're not connecting with their language, you're not going to make sales. And so like the language of a CEO who's a small business owner, who's got the title of CEO, that the language for that person may be very different than the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. And she's, you know, managing tens of thousands of people. And so it's like, you're just, you've got to be able to speak that language to that particular prospect. And I think one of the keys to me, I think about this a lot, is this idea of creating optionality in your offering. I think this is like one of the easiest, like if people are just looking like for quick tactical hits on like how to just increase your average sales size. To me, one of the easiest is to create multiple options for working with you. So like instead of like a lot of people when they present in their proposal, it's like, here's the one way that you can engage with us or work with us. And what we teach obviously is like to have multiple options. So like, you know, as a shorthand, like good, better, best, or, you know, silver, gold, platinum, but like the more you can kind of create that optionality, the more likely you are to kind of pull people up to the higher end price-wise.
Yeah, that was a total game changer for me because I came in, you know, initially offering one option. And I think that, again, the mindset shift from one option to three options was I was challenged to get rejected on one option and I didn't want to get rejected on three options. But it turned out that prospects like to have choice, and having that choice gave them the ability to say which one they wanted and feel like that it was really collaborative and they had some room to dictate their own strategy as well, that self-agency. And what I found was they started to go closer and closer to the higher options. Now, one of the other things that allows us to do as salespeople, especially when you're determining your own pricing structure, is it gives you those baby steps. You can shift up the upper end option and then the option number three, that high end option, can become option two. And you can start to like just take those baby steps out of your comfort zone with what you're pricing your offerings at.
Big time. Yeah, because we can talk about multiple options all day long, but it's like, you know, you think of like when you go to a restaurant, right? If you're going out to dinner for your anniversary and you're taking your spouse out to dinner and dinner's on you, right? So it's like you ask for the wine list, right? So like on any kind of wine list, obviously there's many, many different wines that you can choose from, but like there's almost always like the $25 to $30 bottle of wine. And then on the high end, you've got, let's say, the $500 bottle of wine. And from a pricing perspective of the restaurant, like the goal is to really sell neither of those. I mean, obviously, if you sell the $500 bottle, someone's like, hey, this is a big night. It's our 25th year anniversary. Like, let's do this. Let's see what a $500 bottle of wine is. It's like, cool. But you know, like the restaurant is like, they walk into the back and they're like, someone's buying the $500 bottle. Like, is it even good, right? But what that $500 bottle and the $30 bottle does is it makes the $80 bottle seem like a no-brainer. So like, because no one, oftentimes people don't want the cheapest and they know that the best is really expensive, but it's creating a really obvious framework to buy the $80 bottle. Whereas if you only had one bottle for sale at the restaurant that was like 40, then your average sale size is $40 as opposed to 80. I can talk about that all day long. So what else to, in terms of selling bigger deals, what do you think are kind of key ideas?
Yeah, I think that one of the most important things is to not put all of your eggs in one basket. You've got to have a pipeline that has, you know, several whales, just so that each one doesn't feel too precious. You're able to keep to your strategy with all of these sales conversations. And so that you can continue to live out this concept of like, look, if a sale falls through the crack, if this whale doesn't work out, then I've got two others in my pipeline that I can look at.
Yeah. I think that's so big. I mean, you know, you've got to have fallbacks. You've got to have options, really, right? It's like if you're dating, you know, we were talking about this in the accelerator call the other day. Like if you only have one date, if you're single and you only have one date for the next 3 months, like how important is that one date? It's really important because like you want that to go well. Of course, there's so many reasons that it won't, but like if you only have one date on the calendar, like that's a really important date. But like if you were to say like take a challenge like to go on a date every single work night for the next 3 months, that means you're going to go on like, I don't know what, 60 dates over the next 3 months. Like how important is any individual date? Not important at all. Right. So like now I'm not saying that you're going to get 60 whales on your pipeline, but like if you can have multiple more opportunities in your pipeline, it just takes all the pressure off. So I think it does two things. One is it just like it physically makes you more likely to close a deal, of course, because you're just spreading the risk around. But you're also, it makes you just more comfortable. Because like I think when that one deal matters so much, like you get nervous, you like think you have this like scarcity mentality, like I've got to close this deal or like I can't pay my mortgage. And that's a really horrible place to be.
I think it's the same thing as like if you had a beam a foot off the floor, you could very easily balance on it. You're fine. You just walk across. If you raise that beam to like the Empire State Building, the top of it, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to fall. It's the same concept where it's just going to, it feels like there's so much at stake when you're like that high up in the air. You got to bring that beam down to a foot off the ground if you want to survive.
A foot off the ground. If the beam is a foot off the ground, it's the, like my little 3-year-old kid could do that. If it's in like those pictures of the guys building the Empire State Building, I think, and it's like petrifying. You're like, oh my God, that's a perfect analogy. I love that. So let's close out on final thought here. What do you think about in terms of, or really key in terms of closing out on whale hunting?
Yeah, I think that it's an important exercise. I think that you're going to challenge your mindsets. You're going to get out of your comfort zone. I'm very against comfort zones. They're comfort cages, not comfort zones. And you're just going to be able to operate more in the space of like, who cares? Like some will, some won't, so what next? And I think that that is where our power is as salespeople, is to just take the experiences and understand whether they're going to win or we're going to learn, and you win either way.
That's so true. Yeah, I think one of the big things is because people tend to put a lot of work into the whales is like they don't know when to just be like, this is done, right? And it's like, if you're just kind of like completely like some will, some won't, so what next? It just takes all that pressure off. You stop worrying about the ones that are lost and you just move on and you actually close the ones that are good. And that's how you close whales. So love it. Well, Tiffany, thank you. I love this concept of selling bigger deals. I think the more you can just inch up your average sales size by even 10, 20%, that can just lead to a huge increase in overall sales.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening. Want more tactical advice on selling? Register for our free video training on the 5-step formula to closing more deals without price pushback, think it overs, or ghosting. Simply visit closing.training to get instant access. That's closing.training to get instant access.